Welcome to Day Zero Update for March 29th, 2026. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
And I'm Brandon Perkins.
We had two-man crew this week, but we have plenty of news.
Oh, yes, we do.
Of things that have been going on. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, a bunch of bad news. Some studios shutting down, some layoffs, AI use, all the fun hits for any of this that, you know, we want to see this time of year. And as well as we got a showcase, the Xbox Partner Showcase that had some stuff on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nothing too amazing, but we'll get to that stuff later. But we'll start off with what we can, what we've been playing, and we'll start off here with me. I've been playing some Screamer.
Yeah.
This is an arcade racing game, kind of a follow-up to the original game that came out in like the, the mid-90s.
Yeah.
It kind of came and went, I feel like. I don't think it was much of a notable game when it came out, which is not a huge surprise, but the publisher here, Milestone here, the developer who's made a bunch of indie games, racing games on like the MotoGP license and some other stuff like this, that means they're probably a pretty decent selection for this kind of game. And they kind of take it to a more anime style for the the world. And all that is pretty interesting. Because, you go to the story mode, which is all based around this tournament. The Screamer tournament, I guess. And you're kind of dealing with the aftermath of some event that's happened that I assume I'll get some more backstory on. But they want to get back at this particular guy. And kill him, probably. And so in the process, they try to sign up for this tournament to kind of give them an opportunity to deal with that, you know. But where I'm at, they are just getting into the tournament and doing some of the early stuff there. It has a lot of story to it. And especially it's like tutorial stuff that I'm doing here as I'm learning how to control these cars, because it doesn't control like your typical arcade racing game. Obviously, you know, you're doing gas and brake and all that and steering with the left stick. But when it comes to drifting, you use the right stick to sort of set the sort of direction of the steer you're doing, you know, left or right. Which takes a bit of getting used to, especially because they're, you know, they don't necessarily give you a track that has a bunch of big turns on it or anything like that. So it's like, oh, is this like a ridge racer kind of drift, or is this like, you know, a burnout kind of drift, or what's going on here? And it's kind of not either of those, the way it feels. Maybe it'll get better. As I feel better as I do it some more, but the stream I was doing, it was taking a bit trying to figure out, like, okay, what turns can I deal with that? I just drive through, and which ones do I need to drift through, and sort of where I have to start the drift and all that. It just takes a good bit of time. And as you get further into the tournament, they start introducing more mechanics on top of that. You have like these two different meters at the top of the screen, sort of filling up on left and right from the center of the screen. Left side has I did some races once I was able to jump out of the story mode, trying out a bunch of that stuff where they have all that stuff on by default. And so there's the notion of, you know, you get a boost kind of thing that fills up a meter while you're doing it, that if you do it just right, you get like extra boost out of it versus Just the regular kind of boost, or you could like mess it up and not get much of anything out of it. It's kind of a waste. But you have this bar that's filling up, and every part of it's kind of just giving you multiple boosts that you can do. And on the other side, it's filling up another bar that goes towards thing that's kind of like an attack that you can take out enemy racers with if they're close enough to you. It's not anything like a like say in Mario Kart when you get the big bill bullet bill shots. Like it's not like that. It's more of like if you're within short distance, it'll boost you into them with the ability to kind of kill them and knock them out for a bit. I think they will respawn, but what you kind of get early on is more of just a knockout for a bit, and so they fall further back into the field. And so yeah, it's kind of got that kind of stuff going on to it, and I think there's like two other things on the meter that you eventually have options to do, and I've not really gotten a grip on what that means. So yeah, it's kind of a really interesting sort of set of mechanics here. And at like certain points, you can hit both L3, R3 to go into an overdrive mode, which kind of is like a bullet bill kind of thing from Mario Kart. So if you hit the walls, you explode. So you essentially die and respawn further back into the field. So yeah, it's got some risk reward mechanics out of it that are pretty interesting when they do kind of show up. And yeah, the story mode, you're kind of just going through these dialogue sequences. It has the annoying thing where you can set it to kind of just auto advance, but you have to do that every single time. Goes back to the story mode, the story sequences, which is pretty annoying. And what was the other thing that was annoying me about it? I don't know. But yeah, like got some good music. It kind of jumps between cutscenes and story stuff here and there. But yeah, it's got some neat stuff going on with it, so I'm gonna keep checking it out, see where that goes. But yeah, that's been fun to get some side modes, a lot of basic stuff you would expect. There's like a checkpoint mode that's like your classic arcade mode where you gotta hit these checkpoints to add some time to your timer and kind of keep going until run out of time. So it's like that very classic old school kind of arcade thing. There's one that is just based on that overdrive mode where you're trying to go as far as possible without running into the wall. There's team-based modes, solo modes, and all that, because every team has three drivers in it. And you got your main crew, and the other interesting thing is this is like in a maybe like a cyberpunk futuristic city, and everybody has like auto translators to them. Like even in your main crew, you have a guy who is speaking French, but everybody just understands him. And you run into other crews that have people speaking, Japanese or German or, a bunch of other languages that I'm always trying to discern, like, what's their specific language. Kind of wish it displayed that a little bit, but otherwise it's still pretty neat. Yeah, they make a big deal about, like, this echo tech that they put on the cars that get into the tournament, because it essentially allows you, essentially it's a respawn thing, so it's not necessarily as much of a life or death thing. But the guy that installs it has a dog that has the translation text, so he can talk to his dog and understand him. So there's some fun stuff going on here. So yeah, there's Creamer. The first like big arcade racing game we've had in a long time. Let's see. I got Wiseman's World Retry from Gamefly that I've been playing a little bit of. And that is a JRPG remaster of a DS game. They've made some adjustments to it to make it work better on, a TV or other big screen. And the weird thing was trying to place where the story influences made sense to me, and it's kind of got some Maze Runner kind of thing, where it's set in this little town, maybe a little bit more like a classic fantasy kind of town, with like a castle that's run by the Archbishop, who all the people in this town don't remember their lives before getting to this town, somehow, and the surrounding dungeons essentially are kind of the mazes around the little area that the people in Maze Runner live in. And it's very dangerous. You go out there and you don't come back. People just assume you've died, but also the notion that they could be surviving somewhere and, doing whatever. They don't know, really. They don't really get any idea of what's going on out there. But they send people out once they become of age with magical abilities to kind of go and try and map out the maze or whatever the hell they're doing. I haven't picked up all the story stuff here. But yeah, you play as a kid who is trained by this mage woman, Giselle. I don't know if she's a witch or whatever the way they want to describe her, but she's gone off into the dungeons and hasn't come back. And so, as you become of age, after being trained by her, they kind of send you out. And along the way, you run into these what look like fairies, but they're homunculi that are able to fuse with souls of enemies that you beat and collect the souls to essentially give them new abilities and all that kind of stuff, spells or whatever you want to call it, which is kind of a neat idea. It gives you a party there with these characters, and sort of by default you get your HP and your MP back, so they kind of encourage you, the main character, to be using your spells and whatnot as much as you can. But the homunculi girls are, they get their health back. They don't get their SP back, as they call their skill points, until they either level up or that you go find a place to rest. Which what I have so far is just if I go back to the town and go rest in my room, then they get that back. But so far it's not been that big of a deal. I usually don't use them. Use any of the skill points at the point I'm at right now. And it's been pretty easy so far, especially once I figured out that the one of my starter spells would essentially one-hit kill enemies. It kind of makes it easier to kind of chew through them pretty quickly. Especially just use the homunculi girls and have them just do basic attacks. And sometimes they are elementally advantageous against some enemies. They have sort of a not a triangle of elemental kind of thing. It's four elements, so kind of a diamond shaped thing of like water, fire, wind, and earth. That they have, a thing that you can reference at any point. But yeah, it's a pretty neat little game, but it's also pretty easy, and the story's been whatever so far. But it's got enough decent stuff going on that I'm like, all right, I might play this a bit more before I send it back. But yeah, it's got a nice art style to it. But yeah, it's perfectly fine. I did run into one point that I got further into the game where it was basically like, oh yeah, here's like right after they teach you how to do fast travel back to the dungeon or back to your base. Like, oh, here's a tough enemy. We can't deal with it right now. And I was like, sure, I'll try this out and see what's going on here. And almost beat it, but it eventually started, you know, throwing poison and sleep buffs on my people and killing them off one by one eventually. But where I'm at, I have, you know, a bunch of money I've been using to upgrade my equipment as much as I can. You just buy new equipment that's more powerful than the one you have, and that's basically the gist of what upgrading is so far. There might be some more stuff going on later on, but for now that's kind of what it is. And yeah, it's a fine one of these, especially for a game that never came out to the West on the DS. So yeah, but it has a nice little battle system. It's based on, you know, like a timeline essentially. We see, you know, when people are going to attack and all that, and so if you can take out, you know, enemies that get between your people, you can start the chain system where you get multiple attacks in a row. They get progressively more powerful and other buffs to them, that kind of stuff. So it gets a bit better as you go. Kind of just adds to how easy the combat has been so far. So yeah, it's one of those kind of games, but it's pretty cheap from what I've seen. It's like $25 to get on Steam or PlayStation or whatever for that. But yeah, it's I would say the localization doesn't seem particularly great. I've seen errors here and there, so I'm like, is this just like machine translated or something? Because a lot of like the, if I just let it sit when I launch the game, it shows up like, you know, a trailer kind of a track screen. And that shows both Japanese text and English text on it at the same time. So it very much kind of felt like, when I was starting, I was like, am I just going to see a lot of Japanese text and English text at the same time? Is this kind of where we're at on this localization here? And it's like, no, it's all in English, but certainly kind of a concern of mine. Especially when I was like, wait, I got the English version of this, right? So yeah, that's Wiseman's World Retry. Pretty neat game. And then the last one I've been playing is just some more MLB The Show 26 after my review went up earlier this week. Gave it a 4.5 because I really enjoyed my time with the game. And just been working my way through more of it. Nothing really much to add on that right now. So that's pretty much what I've been doing. So Brennan, how have you been doing?
Well, as for me, I'm still playing Splatoon 3, and I'm still getting better at it. They had a every month they have what they call it. They have a challenge, which is essentially a it's like one of the like regular anarchy battles that you do for like to level up and stuff. But they'll like put on some additional restrictions on it just to sort of make it more interesting. And if you manage to win 5 times, you get prizes and stuff like that. And I did. I managed to do that. And I've also, you know, focusing more on the Salmonid Run stuff, because I had been neglecting that when I've been playing it all this time. It just never, you know, meant anything to me. But, you know, I was at a point in, you know, the regular Anarchy Battle stuff, I was like, I need to go and do something else. And honestly, really love the Salmonid Run stuff. But much like with everything else in that game, it is crazy unbalanced. And there are times when you're just straight up going to get slaughtered, and there's really nothing you can do about it. But otherwise, it's a very very fun, and it's become like a nightly ritual for me at this point. Yeah, so I'm doing that. I also went back and, I say went back. I managed to finish and get the true ending for Mio Memories in Orbit, which was, anybody who could read my review on Smash Pad, I do recommend that game, but I recommend it with a caveat that You know, if you're unless you're like really good with platformers, this game will absolutely crush you. And the last sort of few hours of that game to get the true ending are absolutely grueling in their difficulty. They're not impossible by any means, but it takes a lot of precision, perfect platforming and muscle memory, and especially the last boss that you fight before getting the true ending is the single hardest boss in the entire game. Partly because they have like a move set that's like three times as big as like every other boss you've come up to at that point in that game. But I did finally do it. I did manage to beat them, and it was, you know, it ends on a very melancholy, heartfelt way, which I thought was very appropriate and wonderful. But and then because now that's finally done, I can finally go back to start playing Trails Beyond the Horizon again, which, you know, it's a Trails game. I was glad to be back in that universe again with those characters. Gotten kind of a bit further in it, not very much, mostly because, you know, the Mio stuff took up a while. But yeah, that's basically what I've been playing.
All right, so yeah, let's get to some news here. Yeah, let me see here. Yeah, we got some news. One date here, at least in the main part of the show. Pokemon Champions is going to be coming out on the Switch, April 8th. It's a free to start game, as they're calling it. Yeah, and that yeah, it seems like I'll have an update on launch day, so the Switch 2 version or the Switch version will look better on the Switch 2. Yeah, there'll be a starter pack bundle on April 8th so that you can give them some money. That let's see, in-game benefits like additional Pokemon storage, an extra battle song, and more. They'll be out on mobile later this year. At some point, there'll be cross-play for that. It links to Pokemon Home, so that if you have Pokemon there from other games you've collected, mostly Pokemon Go, Scarlet and Violet, Legends Arceus, and Legends ZA, that can tie into that for your crew of Pokemon you can deal with. But yeah. Let's see, you'll have ranked battles and casual battles when it launches, so yeah. I think I saw somewhere that it was gonna also gonna have like battle passes and that kind of stuff, so gonna be one of those kind of games. Which is not too surprising. So yeah, that'll be out here in about a week or so. Be the next game, next Pokemon game you can complain about. But I'll probably check it out since it'll be free to start. What kind of shit they'll try to charge me for in it. But yeah, that's pretty much the only non-annoying news we got here. First up here for the annoying news, Sony announced that there are going to be price increases for the PS5, PS5 Pro, and PlayStation Portal starting on April 2nd. So if you want to avoid paying these prices for those machines, you got a few more days to do so.
Yeah, and you better hurry, 'cause supplies will disappear.
The PS5 is going up to $649.99. The PS5 Digital is going up to $599.99, and the PS5 Pro is going up $150 to $899.99.
So for all intents and purposes, it's over $900.
Yeah.
That is a lot.
And then the PlayStation Portal will be going up from $199 to $249. So yeah. That's a lot of money. And as we've seen, there's a lot of shit going on that's causing this, from AI causing component shortages, the war in Iran, is causing a lot of chaos with fuel prices and other components relying on things that would be shipped through the Strait of Hormuz is not going through right now, causing all sorts of chaos. And yeah, tariffs probably also playing a little bit of a thing here, but it's mostly the shortages on things like SSDs, storage, starting to hit other components now, like CPUs and all that kind of fun stuff. So yeah, just causing this, and they seem to be ripping off the Band-Aid right now for what people are going to have to pay for the time being, and I would not blame anybody for not wanting to pay these prices. I'm gonna see if I can try and get a PS5 Pro. I was gonna try to trade in some stuff. It looks like GameStop doesn't have it most places around here. I might drop into one just to see for myself if it might just be the online site being buggy or whatever. But it was very much being like, oh, with you can drive 100 and some miles away to West Virginia to get one. Same for Pennsylvania as well. It's like, no, I'm good. There's one I could potentially get. It's not that far away, like 15 miles away. But just an area that I don't normally go to. Fun times, especially when they've shut down a bunch of GameStops as well.
Yes, they
Which
have.
they still list one of them on this website. I can look at the hours, and it's just like, shows nothing. Like, we got no hours because doesn't exist anymore, but we aren't going to remove it from the system. Well, that's the fun thing there, but I think some of the other stores have them, Walmart or Best Buy or Target or Find One, but I like to trade in some things so it makes it cheaper, but I don't know. We'll see. And it's like, if I just go get it at the price that it's at now, and it's like, then what the fuck is a PS5 trade-in gonna get me? Like, I can go do that. They're doing little bonus for trading consoles. But it's like, what am I gonna spend that money? I don't really need anything else right now, but yeah, that's kind of what's fun now. So but yeah, if you bought a Pro last time it was on sale, you did the very smart thing. Same with any of this other stuff. Fortunately, we're at a point where these consoles are better to get early on when you can afford them and not wait for a discount, because who knows when that's going to be, if it's going to even be a discount. So yeah, I don't know if you have anything to add on the price increases.
Like part of me thinks this is sort of an excuse that they were already planning to raise up the prices, but on the other hand, I mean, it's a pretty good excuse.
Yeah. I've been seeing people like looking at the price of SSDs that they bought for their PS5s. Like the one that I paid for $240, I think, for 4 terabyte. A few years ago, that was like a splurgy price. That was like, I think that particular model's out of stock now, but the similar ones are basically like $600 now. And it's like, holy shit. Like, I spent extra money than I would have liked to have spent at the right time. Especially when you move them to another PS5, it does not need to be like reformatted or anything. So it makes it nice to have like, here's 4 terabytes of games that I don't have to read. And that's the other thing that's like, maybe I'll go for the PS5 Pro now instead of fucking around. We'll see. So yeah, I would not be surprised if Xbox has a price increase at some point this year, and Nintendo very much as well. They would certainly want to minimize that as much as it can. I could see the base model going up to 500 in the short term, and bump up the Mario Kart World bundle up to 550. Things are kind of getting ridiculous, and any kind of electronics company is dealing with this shit now. So yeah, that's kind of where we're at on all of this stuff. So yeah, then speaking of price increases, Nintendo announced their own thing, which is that they are increasing the price of physical games for the future. They say like physical and digital are not going to be the same price anymore. Particularly starting with Yoshi and the Mysterious Book, which was priced at $60 for both. It's now going to be $70 for the retail, or yeah, for the retail version. Saying here, new Nintendo published digital titles exclusive to Nintendo Switch 2 have an MSRP that is different from physical versions. Nintendo games offer the same experiences, whether in packaged or digital format, and this change simply reflects the different costs associated with producing and distributing each format and offers players more choice in how they can buy and play Nintendo games. And they also note at the end that retailers can set their own prices, so there might be some variability. Which isn't really going to happen here in the US, but maybe in other regions. But yeah. If you don't know, plastic is oil-based. And guess what costs a lot now?
Oil.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does, and on the one hand, it does make sense that, it's like, look, if you're going to get a digital, you might as well not pay as much for a physical copy. Because, if you're doing digital, you don't have to spend all that money on the materials to actually make, the cartridge and everything.
Yeah.
But, on the other hand, I still like to get physical stuff when I can.
Yeah.
The good news, though, I guess the silver lining is, on top of, the fact that the digital ones are going to be digital copies will cost less, they're not increasing the prices of the physical copies. Just, but, yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't know if they're how much they're going to increase the physical copies. They're basically doing what is happening for a lot of physical games, especially for indie stuff, where physical editions are just more expensive because they're more bespoke versions. For Nintendo, they're making it at a scale that they don't necessarily have to increase them that much, but probably expect $10 difference for most of these games.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe more, because now we got $80 games from Nintendo on the Switch too, so that could be the fun thing. But yeah, they also make this seem like it could be different for any of these games coming out after Yoshi. That'll be fun.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, I was looking at the Switch 2 releases for Nintendo so far, and yeah, they range from $65 to $80 right now for most of these games. Like the 65 ones are like Animal Crossing and Xenoblade Chronicles X, which were $5 upgrades from their $60 releases on the Switch 1. But a lot of the $70 and $80 ones, or the $70 ones, have been mostly the normal prices for Switch 2 native stuff. The $80 ones are mostly the upgrades that you're like, this DLC upgrade costs $20, and you're gonna like it. I think Breath of the Wild's the only one that has like a $10 one. So yeah, but they do mention Nintendo published digital titles exclusive to the Nintendo Switch 2. So that maybe throws in a little wrench for things that are upgrades and whatnot. But yeah. This will just be another thing to keep an eye on for Nintendo releases for the future. Especially as they're talking about revising their hardware production for this quarter. Down a little bit. I think 33%. Something like that. Which I think is more because of how much stock there is available right now. No sense in stuffing that channel too much, but yeah. That's your Nintendo news for the week. Let's get to AI news, because Crimson Desert has been selling very well, and people figured out pretty quickly that some of this art here looks suspicious.
Yeah, and by suspicious, we mean very clearly made by generative AI.
Yeah. Seemed to be a lot of art that looked like it was very kind of old style generative AI art, where it's like horses with multiple more legs than they should have, or people merging into horses and all this kind of weird shit. It just looked pretty obviously bad. AI art that looks good enough that you understand why the devs would have not replaced it. But they put out a statement basically apologizing for this, claiming it was placeholder art, which is like, no, we're not doing this excuse anymore. I don't know that's Clair Obscur Expedition 33 should have been accepted for that use.
Yeah.
But yeah, they basically say like, oh, this, let me see here, their full during development, some 2D visual props were created as part of early stage iteration using experimental AI generative tools. These assets helped us rapidly explore tone and atmosphere in earlier phases of production. However, our intention has always been for any such assets to be replaced following final work and review by our art and development teams, with work that aligned with our quality standards and creative direction, which seeing talk about the game and all that in reviews and such, I don't know that you had quality standards.
Yeah.
It seems like a game that I've seen people joke. Any idea that they came up for new mechanics, they said yes to all of them. Not whether they needed to be in there. Yeah, following reports from our community, we've identified that some of these assets were unintentionally included in the final release. This is not in line with our internal standards, and we take full responsibility for it. We also acknowledge that we should have clearly disclosed our use of AI. While these tools are primarily used during early production, the expectation that these assets would be replaced prior to release. We recognize that this does not excuse the lack of transparency. So they're conducting comprehensive audits of all in-game assets and replacing that stuff, which very convenient.
Yeah.
Waiting until after launch, after they sold, I think 3 million copies is the thing I've seen so far.
Yeah.
So yeah, they want to get this out of the way and be able to keep making money.
And as for like the game itself, it's okay. Like it tries to do too, its biggest issue is it tries to do too much. And it just has doesn't really have like the staying power for it. It just doesn't. There's a lot of potential that they do, and I've heard like people compare it to like No Man's Sky, and that there's like, man, there is so much they could do with this. But here's the thing. No Man's Sky, when it released, it got s trashed when it came when it originally came out, and it took a good several months before they started improving it. And you know, now it's one of the best games you can possibly play on the market. It didn't start that way. Yeah, you know, Hello Games took a long time to have to like, you know, rebuild their credibility. And you know, these guys are coming out of the gate, you know, with all the and you know, with this game, and you know, it's got potential, but you throw in the AI generated shit that just makes it even worse. Also, for whatever reason, it got swept up in the culture war bullshit. So now you've got people who were defending it to the death.
Oh, yeah.
'Cause that's the world we live in now.
Yeah. And I would say, like, No Man's Sky, I feel like, was a lot more interesting from the go, from launch. It was, always going to be a game that got updated with new stuff in it. Whereas this, it feels like, from everything I've heard, this started off as, like, a spin-off of Black Desert Online to being its own thing, and then being like a multiplayer focused thing to one that way to single player thing. That explains why like the main character is kind of they probably intended for character creator at one point when it was going to be more of a multiplayer thing, but then they switched to a single player thing and like, oh, why would we change that? A lot of
Yeah.
that really. And it's like I've heard things about some of the updates where it's like the inventory had a pretty hard limit on it for things you would collect, and you get a lot of like mission items that would take up slots in that, and they just increase the limit to such a degree that you can basically just farm a bunch of materials to get rich and not have to worry about being precious with your upgrades and equipment and all that kind of stuff. And it's like it feels like a game that's being updated to fix problems, but they don't necessarily know what the right balance is for it yet. Maybe they'll get there, but I'd say this almost feels a bit more like a cyberpunk, less broken than cyberpunk was, but definitely sort of a game that got out there that's, you can enjoy and all that, but it clearly has a lot of rough edges, especially for people that want games that are going to be able to be playable start to finish without feeling like a mess. Everything I've seen has basically made it seem like this is one of those kind of games that is just pretty rough around the edges, but it's gonna doing well enough that you could you can see where they may end up getting to at some point. We'll see. But yeah, that's kind of where that game is at right now. But people do put it in the realm of like Red Dead Redemption 2, and not in the good parts of it. Or in the how there's all these mechanics, and maybe not a ton of interesting things to do with them. So yeah. But yeah, well, speaking of AI, Capcom says they're going to get in on that stuff. Say they're going to use generative AI to improve efficiency and productivity of game development. They seem to also imply that it's not going to, yeah, our company will not be implementing any AI-generated assets into our video game content. On the other hand, going forward, we plan to actively utilize this technology in order to improve efficiency and productivity of game development. That is why we are currently testing out various methods of usage across our departments, including graphics, sound, and programming, which very much makes it seem like this is more of a thing to entice shareholders to invest in with them. The thing that most companies have been saying, like, oh yeah, we'll use this to improve productivity and all this stuff, without really going all in on like this is the future of game development. This is what we're gonna make all our stuff in, and all that. Especially when I think I saw that Square Enix is adding an AI dragon partner to their Dragon Quest X MMO. So if you get bored doing your grinds and all that, you can talk to a dumb little AI dragon based on, I think, the Google Gemini stuff. So yeah. So hopefully this doesn't make it into any of the games, but people are very much high on Capcom right now, so people are going to very much be paying attention to anything that looks the slightest bit fucked up in games. So yeah, that's kind of where we're at. I don't know if you have anything to add on that.
It just sucks. I mean, like we talked about this on Let's Weekend, yes, last night, but Sora has been shut is shutting down. Grok's Imagine, its generative AI program, it's gone paid only now. Because these both of these programs were just hemorrhaging money. And it's just generative AI is a shortcut that really is just it's for losers. Like it can be fun to play around with. I've played around with generative AI a lot, but it's all slop. Like all of it is. Every last piece of it is slop. It's all got, that AI that, that manufactured AI sheen to it. Anybody can look, pretty much anybody can look at an AI image and immediately tell that it's AI. Like it is the for all the talk of how, AI is getting more and more realistic, after you've seen enough of it, it becomes shockingly easy to realize if something has been generated using generative AI. It doesn't really offer anything of worth. Not even like even if you're using this like, oh, I want to use it for like, as a, like a visual reference or like a like something to build off of. You can find stuff out in the wild that can do the exact same thing, and none of it is made with generative AI.
Yeah, there are tons of artists out there that'll do this work.
And for very reasonable prices, too. And the only reason, really, that a lot of people use generative AI is, well, no, that's not true, because like I said earlier, most of that stuff you actually have to pay for it now. And you should never have to pay for AI slop, ever. Because it ain't worth the money that you give it. But yeah, that's about all I can think of.
Yeah. It's a shame that you have to be like given these kind of AI platitudes to make sure your stockholder stuff is going the way it should. That's basically just like one of those basic things you have to do to make sure your stock prices aren't. So yeah, that ends up being the Capcom news of the week. Let's see. We got some shutdowns here. Sony's shutting down Dark Outlaw Games. This was a studio that they founded last year with Jason Blundell, former Treyarch guy, one of the more notable people working on Call of Duty stuff in recent memory. That formed a studio, Deviation Games, a few years ago that ended up not really going anywhere. I seem to get Jason Blundell to work on another, form another studio, and sort of in the process of that, seems like whatever pitches or whatever they were making did not fit what Sony was looking for, and end up having them shut down again. Yeah, so it feels like they are, Sony is kind of moving into a place of wanting to work on games either with the first party studios they have or work with external partners that they've been doing, with like Last Soul Aside and a bunch of these other games that they've been publishing of late. Seems like this affects about 50 people for that. But yeah, not really too much else. Unless you want to say something, Brandon.
Nope, not really. It's another example of the industry is in contraction and has been for the last couple of years.
Yeah. So yeah, there you go for that. The other shutdown, kind of more consequential, developer Ivy Road, makers of Wonderstop, one of our favorite games of last year, has announced that they are shutting down because they basically don't have the funding to continue to exist. They mentioned they have another project they were working on, I think called Engine Angel. That they were kind of working on and seemed to be getting some positive progress on that, but ended up not getting any funding at the moment, which is a shame. Wonderstop seemed like it did pretty decently, but not enough to fund a whole new game. And yeah, that seems like they will be shutting down, yeah, March 31st, so in a matter of days here, announcing that they are, check out the people that's are going to be going out there and applying for jobs, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, sad to see because that the game was really fun. Should have done better. Unfortunately, like a lot of games, it did fine, but the funding stuff that's going on right now is just really hard for anybody to get anything if you're not promising the moon, I guess.
Yeah, unfortunately. Which is really sad because, I mean, it was one of our favorite games of last year. It was genuinely a really good, cozy game. But the industry is just really in a rough place right now. And
Yeah.
it's harder on indie studios than it is on a lot of others.
Yeah. They did mention there's going to be one final update that lets players play any chapter they want without having to do any of the busy work in between. You put in a code that will let you access later sections of the game on demand. So that's nice, at least. But yeah, wish everybody there best of luck. Then we get to this whole thing with Epic Games laying off over 1,000 people. As I think they mention, Fortnite is basically getting less and less engagement going on
Yeah.
with it. The citing that the decline began in 2025 and that the studio hasn't recovered since. Also mentioning, broader industry-wide changes like slower growth and lower console sales, as well as challenges unique to Epic, which mostly ties into Fortnite. They spend a ton of money on Fortnite. It seems like they probably haven't been making as much of that money back as they would like. So they've been laying people off, huge swaths of the company, which it doesn't help that who was it, Mark Raine, the CEO, or no, Tim Sweeney, basically going out and being like, we only hire the best people, so this is actually a good thing because there's going to be tons of amazing people on the market now. And it's like the best people that have been out there are still out there. There's not enough jobs for all of these people to fill up. So now you've just essentially doomed all the people that have been trying to find jobs to have much more competition on that stuff. It's just kind of a very weird statement for him to put out. That is kind of, a typical kind of platitude, like, oh, these people are all great people, definitely, keep them in mind for applications and all that kind of stuff. But, kind of comes off a little less genuine for him versus, the people running Ivy Road, where you'd believe them, actually caring about the people they're laying off versus Epic Games, where, the other thing that just came up is that they had an employee that had terminal brain cancer who, was especially grateful to be working there because they had good insurance perks and all that. Who now has to deal with navigating all of that without insurance and sort of the see Mike Prinky, his wife was posting on Facebook that he was facing terminal brain cancer, would be losing his life insurance due to the cuts. And sort of dealing with, because his condition is now considered a pre-existing condition, he can't get new coverage. And sort of how they're going to afford, what kind of funeral they can do, how to take care of the kid they have, and dogs and all that kind of stuff, safely. But it seems like, there has been an update that Tim Sweeney is in touch with the family, so maybe they will help them out on that. That would be the nice thing to do.
Yes, it would be. It would be the decent thing to do.
And I think also part of this, they are shutting down a few of the extra modes in Fortnite, Rocket Racing, Ballistic, and Festival Battle Stage, because they're just not generating the numbers that justify them sticking around. Though I think they're going to be taking basically a lot of the tools to make that stuff and just putting it in the regular Fortnite tools so that you can just build racing stuff or whatever into the main Fortnite stuff. But yeah, part of the issue with Fortnite is that they pivoted to essentially doing what Roblox has been doing, but with better, pay rates and all that. That hasn't been generating the numbers that Roblox can do because Roblox, their audience is kids, and guess what? There's always new kids. Whereas with Fortnite, you're appealing to, children as well, but mostly adults, who can, just decide like, okay, I've had enough of this. I'm done for a while. Not necessarily be married to the concept of playing Fortnite forever and ever. And so yeah, that kid audience is not going to be there forever. They're not beholden to staying to your game. Like Roblox has the peer pressure built into it, kind of keep it being a big game for all that. So Fortnite doesn't really have that, especially at the moment.
No.
I don't know if you have anything to add on that.
Not really. I mean, we always realized that at some point Fortnite was going to have a big downturn because it was, the top game for several years, and eventually, it was they were going to eventually it was going to run out of steam. Like all, long running properties like that, eventually they'll run out. It's just the nature of the game, really. But part of the reason Roblox can basically, keep going while as they can is Roblox offers, Roblox is like the Lego of video gaming. They give you a bunch of tools and you can just do whatever with them. Fortnite, theoretically, it could have that, but they've, in fact, I think that's kind of might have been an idea they originally had when they were originally developing the game, but then they happened upon the whole idea of the Battle Royale thing, and that basically made gangbusters. So that's pretty much their entire business model now.
Yeah, like their business model has been basically throwing thousands of people at expanding the amount of content that goes into Fortnite,
Yeah.
and when those numbers don't stay high on that stuff, their only recourse is to lay off tons of people.
Yeah. And as far as like the actual game is concerned, Fortnite is still a solid battle royale, but that's it.
Yeah.
So
The other modes that are like, oh, here's racing, here's this thing that's like Valiant, any other mode they're trying to learn, ape or rip off or whatever is not pulling in any numbers to stay relevant. Like their best stuff has just been like, what if we take the Battle Royale stuff and make it more like it used to be? Is there OG mode? What if we take out the build stuff as an optional thing, and like that also as a core thing? But a lot of the other stuff is just not really a thing that drives people to get there. So yeah, you kind of just end up with a game that's gonna have its ups and downs based on the whims of the audience and their interest in it. And so yeah, I don't think they've been really pulling anything into the game IP wise that has matched what, Star Wars and The Simpsons have been providing them of late. Like they brought in Harry Potter stuff and that did not seem to do well at all. And it's like, yeah, you're kind of running out of ideas for that stuff, kind of where you're at. But yeah. So that's the rest of your industry news there, the last of it. We'll get to the Xbox Partner Showcase. Which seemed like the first one of these we've had where they are kind of doing more than what whatever the Devolver or the developer directs, whatever they're calling those, versus like here's four games and then a secret one that we won't tell you about is also part of this. This is just like their version of like the State of Play or the partner directs that Nintendo does with all third party games. And yeah, we got some good stuff here and some stuff that seems fine. Like they started off with Hunter the Reckoning Death Wish, which is out next summer 2027. And like, sure, I guess you could do a new one of these. But they were always a series that was like fine. Not really one that's exciting or bringing in big numbers or anything. But yeah. They have Teyon working on this, who is I think the developer of like the RoboCop game and the Terminator game, which are all pretty solid games. So maybe this will be better than I would expect on this. But
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
yeah, the co-op shooter kind of games. So we'll see where that goes. Let's see. We got Withering Waves, the Genshin Impact like. That came out on PS5 last year. It's finally coming to Xbox in July. So you can play that on there. You need your anime gacha RPG thing with characters that look like they could have easily come out of Genshin Impact. Or may also be in Genshin Impact, as far as I know. So yeah, there you go. Then we got The Expanse, Osiris Reborn. The big third-person action RPG based in the Expanse universe. Going to PS5, Xbox, PC, and Game Pass next
Yeah.
spring 2027. And they capped off the excitement of that by admitting that they're using Gen AI for
Which
that
really
game.
soured the experience for me because I was really looking forward to this because I love The Expanse. I loved what I was seeing. I'm still, I'm still looking forward to it, but let's just say that my anticipation has lessened somewhat. Because if they're admitting to using Gen AI, then it puts suspicion on what the quality of the end product is going to be like.
Yeah, especially when the way they describe it here is that generative AI tools will be leaned upon during development. The end result will still be human made. We don't use it to create any assets that will be in the game. We use it for a lot of prototyping, trying things out, placeholders. They will all be replaced at the end. We use it basically for trying out things on a technical level. And it's like the problem with that is that relying on AI for like things you're doing in the early parts of the game means that either it's going to be quality is going to be compromised from the start, or you're going to be too reliant on it to have issues trying to build more things without the AI's help, which is the problem with a lot of like the using generative AI for prototyping or like placeholder art or that kind of stuff is that. You get too reliant on it, you either build it to use it to build out like realistic looking art that you would use in the final game, and then forget to put it take it out. Then you end up with the thing we've seen a handful of times where it's like, oh, this was just placeholder, and it's like nobody really believes you with any of this. So yeah, this is not new for Owlcat Games. They've been hinting at AI stuff they've been trying to use for the last couple years. As they link to a post here of job listings for concept artists, where they mention they want people that generates concept art using AI and other tools, that kind of stuff back in 2024. So yeah, certainly gives the people who don't want anything to do with AI enough reason to, write this game off. And anybody that's skeptical will just have a side eye view of this game for the next year or so. But they will have a play test, I think, next month, or closed beta, April 22nd. So you'll be able to at least see what the game is looking like. But yeah, there you go for that. We got Grave Seasons. This is a life sim game, but with like a horror game kind of mystery to it. PS5, Xbox, Switch, and PC on August 14th. So this one's published by Blumhouse Games. They have a demos coming out soon for this, and it'll also be on Game Pass. So you can check that one out. Then we got yet another Serious Sam game, Shatterverse, based in the multiverse. This seems like a co-op shooter kind of thing, roguelike, probably. But yeah, the concept is that these monsters are coming to kill every Serious Sam. And so they have a group of them, a handful of them that you can pick between that probably have their own proficiencies and whatnot to them. But yeah, you're gonna team up with people and shoot a bunch of alien monsters. Seems they got like grappling hooks and all this other kind of weird stuff in there, so they're doing all that kind of stuff. If you want something fun, go look up how many Serious Sam games there are.
There's a lot.
There's more than you think. Just go to Steam, look up Serious Sam, and there's a shitload of them. I'm looking on the wiki page. There's six games in the main series. And spin-offs, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. And they count this in the spin-offs, which might be true or not. I think there's also VR stuff as well. I think there's VR versions of some of the early games, so this might be undercounting it. But I was looking at this, I think during the spring sale, and it's like, how many fucking games are there with Serious Sam on? There were some really interesting ones early on because there's like side-scrolling shooters and some that are like an RPG and that kind of stuff. Yeah, there's like a lot of it. This one looks neat. No date on this, just they're working on it. Might be out sometime this year. And we got Stranger Than Heaven, like the one game that was, and they're like, oh, check this out for this game. And it seems like all we really found out is that they will have another stream for it on May 6th, that they call Xbox Presents a Special Look at Stranger Than Heaven. Off more of it. This trailer just seemed to be like it takes place over the course of five different decades in this one town. So 1915, 1929, 1943, 1951, and 1965.
So we got, let's see, that's the
World War One, World War Two.
Well, yeah, I was fixing to say it's like the begin, it's like the starts in the Taisho period, goes into the Showa era, and yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Because I know because the Taisho era starts in like 1912, and the Showa era starts like in I think the 1930 in like 1930 something like that. Because the Taisho era didn't last very long. The Emperor Taisho was a very sickly dude, and yeah.
Yeah. And I guess these different eras will be in different cities as well, so that'll be interesting.
I mean, it's gonna be neat to see because, like, the early 20th century for Japan is a very interesting and very tumultuous era, part period of history, because you're coming off. The end of the Meiji Restoration, where Japan was rapidly westernizing, and then you go into like the very sort of unsteady Taisho period, because the Taisho period is when it was when Japan's erstwhile democratic system was being tested, because it was the first time after Emperor Meiji when that system had formed. Now working without him, and of course, after Taisho dies, comes Emperor Showa, and a bunch of people with him end up more or less founding a de facto dictatorship, and that ultimately leads into World War II. So, yeah, and then there's the years immediately following that, when Japan, it took Japan a few years to really manage to rebuild itself. Yeah, it's actually honestly not a bad idea for games at all.
Yeah.
It's gonna be, though, it is gonna be, it's gonna be touchy though, because this is being developed by the Yakuza people, and they rather famously do like to, as goofy as those games can be, they do like to try and put in serious themes and stuff. Talking about, having the game take place in like 1943, like that's like 2 years before, the bombs drop, and talking about Japan's wartime conduct is a very touchy subject over there. So it's going to be interesting to see like how they're going to go about all of that.
Yeah, we'll see. Again, they'll have a showcase in May, so
Yeah.
we'll find out then. Then we got Super Meat Boy 3D. That's going to be out March 31st, so in a couple days here. I've heard good things about this game, so I'm curious.
I've played the original Super Meat Boy. That game is hard as balls. Like,
Yeah.
and it looks like this one's also going to be hard as balls.
Yeah, what if you made a 3D platformer in that vein? So yeah, that's on PS5, Xbox, Switch 2, and PC, as well as Game Pass, so you can check that out in a couple days. Let's see, we got Forever Ago. Which is sort of a, looks like a narrative adventure game kind of thing. Yeah, like you're this guy that's on a road trip. That seems like looking, you know, he's an old guy, so he's looking back on his life and all this, and seems like a pretty neat idea, I guess. And you take the role of Alfred as he navigates the aftermath of a tragedy in his life. Propelled by his minivan and armed with an instant camera, he embarks on a journey north in search of redemption. So yeah. So yeah, an original soundtrack by the guy that did Slay the Spire. Yeah, so that'll be out. I think what they say this fall.
Sounds great.
PS5, Xbox, Switch 2, PC, and Game Pass, so check that one out. We've got our first Xbox exclusive, Ascend to Zero. This is a time control roguelike action game. July 13th, it'll be out. Game Pass, yeah, Xbox, PC, and Game Pass for that. So that looks interesting. The trailer just looked like nonsense because it's kind of is nonsense when you're not doing the things yourself. It has a lot of like freezing time to dodge attacks and all this kind of stuff going on. So that looks like that could be neat. Let's see. Yeah, then they said, hey, Dispatch. If you did not realize, was not out on Xbox, but it'll be coming to Xbox this summer. That's pretty much it there. Then we got the most video game ass name I've seen in a while, Alien Deathstorm, from Rebellion. It's a first-person action horror game. PS5, Xbox, PC, and Game Pass be out next year. So that looks decent enough. Yeah, let's see. Then we got Frog Squad. This game I've seen a little bit about. It's an indie co-op game. You're playing as, you know, the titular Frog Squad. The squad is spelled SQWAD. Basically, the premise is that you're trying to collect all this food for the Frog King, or the Swamp King, they call him. So you need to go and gather up all this food to take back to your king. And hope that you get enough. I assume you go through different stages, and eventually you're going to either fall behind or and have to start over, or keep up and keep going and see what kind of weird places you go to for all this. It's got some neat like platforming mechanics, using your tongue to swing around and grab things and throw them around and all that kind of stuff. So. That looks like that could be pretty fun. That'll be on Xbox and PC and Game Pass, so that'll be out in June. Then we got Bluey's Happy Snaps. This is a new Bluey game. That seems like it is. How do they describe this? It seems like you're going on a family trip with the kids and the parents. You have this camera that you're taking pictures of stuff, yeah, decorating scrapbooks and finding things, doing little mini games and all that kind of stuff, it seems like. So, yeah, could be a good one of those. That'll be out later this year. So yeah, PlayStation, Xbox, Switch 2, and PC. Yeah, nothing really. And I guess Game Pass as well. Then we got the first DLC for Stalker 2, part of Chernobyl, called Cost of Hope. It's coming out this summer for PS5, Xbox, and PC. More stuff going on as you would expect from this world. So yeah, have fun with that. Let's see. Then we got Musa: Dirty Fates. This is a game that got announced a little while ago. 17th century Korea set dark action game. I don't know if it's a Souls-like or maybe it's more. What's the other From Software game? The action game.
Not Bloodborne.
No, the one they did for Activision.
The Mecha one?
No.
No, not that one. Shit. I'm absolutely blanking on here on this one.
The ninja action game kind of
Oh,
thing.
Sekiro?
Yeah, seems like this might be what more you're more getting out of this, but I don't know. Seems neat. That'll be out next year. PS5, Xbox, PC, and Game Pass. So yeah. Looks interesting. Very bloody. Lots of attacking enemies and just having blood spurt out. So, maybe one of those kind of games. Then we get to maybe the most fucked up game here of the entire show, The Eternal Life of Goldman, where it looks like it's a, great looking, like side-scrolling platformer kind of thing. But then you're like hitting enemies with your like pain pogo thing and causing them to kill themselves. And it's like, what the fuck is going on here? It seems to have elements of like Hollow Knight and
The DuckTales games.
Cuphead and that kind of
Yeah,
stuff.
that too.
With all the style that's going on here, and it looks pretty nice. Xbox demo is supposed to be out now for this. But yeah, let's see. Yeah, sometime later this year it'll be out. Xbox and PC and Game Pass, so that'll be interesting to see.
It looks gorgeous. Like, it's incredibly well animated. And like the gameplay, it reminds me of a little bit of like DuckTales and Shovel Knight. But really, really gruesome at the same time.
So yeah, there's that one. Let's see. Then yeah, we got Trailer for Vaunted. It was a weird looking game. Seems like a tactical RPG kind of game to it. Really enough, the only game here that's not coming to Xbox.
Coming to PC.
Yeah, just PC.
And like gameplay wise, it looks a lot like Valkyria Chronicles. Like, this is very similar to what that is, with bits of XCOM thrown in. But it's like a cartoony and with aliens and stuff, and I'm like, all right, you know what? Sign me up. Actually looks like something neat.
So yeah, it's basically coming to PC and early access on Steam, Epic, and Microsoft Store later this year, and it'll be on Game Pass as well. So yeah, that could be interesting. Then we got to a long-awaited announcement of Hades 2 coming to the PS5 and Xbox. That'll be happening on April 14th. It'll also be on Game Pass. That's something you can finally play if you don't have a Switch 2 or a PC you want to play on. As like, I think these are Hades and Hades 2 are the only games from this studio that I've not beaten. And more that there's a lot of shit that goes into it. It's not just a straightforward game.
Yeah, especially Hades 2. Hades 2 has like a whole other area of the game that's locked off. Until you get to a certain point. And the regular game by itself is already pretty substantial.
I was like, boy, I got my work cut out for me on that stuff. And I've said before, like, I play them, I enjoy them a lot, and then I, take a little break and just end up not coming back to them for a while. Not coming back into it, because I think, like, the first game, I think my stopping point was always the third boss, the Minotaur and his buddy fight. Was like, that was always tough. Maybe I beat it once, I don't know. But it's always like, yeah, it takes a lot to get there. Maybe I'll just put it on the easy mode and just play through it. But yeah, there's that. And then they ended on a very weird looking game called Artificial Detective, which seems like you are playing as a robot detective guy who is sort of taking care of this girl. And in the trailer, they're like, main base is this train that's running on the monorail kind of thing here, but the like weird I don't know, robot pieces or whatever, sentient pieces that are coming out of dead animals and all this other stuff and forming into its own entity, managed to sneak into the train and destroy it and put both of your characters' lives at stake, and all this stuff, and it's gonna be a weird looking game.
Let's just say, like, there's a lot about it that looks really cool, except for the hero. Do you know what he reminds me of?
What's that?
Do you remember when we were younger with those old, I think it was like old Duracell commercials with like the battery operated robot people.
I don't know if I know that one.
Was it Duracell? Let's see. Yeah, it was the Duracell family. Yep, I'm looking at it right now. Oh God. Yeah, it's reminding me way too much of that.
Yeah.
And also that like one old Andy Kaufman movie from like the early 80s. But that's like a whole other thing. But otherwise, everything else actually looks really interesting.
Yeah. I think the thing it reminds me of is I had to look this up, Bicentennial Man.
Yeah.
Robin Williams as a robot man.
Yeah.
That's Nightmare Fuel. It's like, yeah, I don't know. This guy looks better, but also the gameplay looks fake. Like
Yeah.
it's prototype gameplay of what they want this stuff all to work like,
Yeah.
and not like what we're gonna actually get.
Right.
But yeah, this is out next year at some point, so it certainly has to be real in some sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, it seems like this involves the people behind Love, Death, and Robots, the Netflix series, working with DreamWorks and Crytek, so maybe that's where some of that is coming from, the DreamWorks
Yeah.
part of this. And I was like, Crytek, what the fuck are you doing making games? You're supposed to be dead. I guess they're looking at here, like, they technically announced Crysis 4 4 years ago, and I don't think we've heard a single thing about that. I guess they still have Hunt Showdown 1896 as the thing they're doing. But also, I don't hear much in the way of people talking about that. So I don't know. I still don't know what they're doing. I guess they have this game. But what is that even? Let me go to their website, see what they have on here. Yeah, Hunt Showdown's their thing they're focused on here. It's an update from March 18th, so at least something going on with that, but yeah. Crytek is a weird name to throw around right now because it used to mean like top of the line games, but after Crysis came out and they worked on like two and three, they became more consoleized. I don't think anybody knows what Crytek is anymore. Yeah, I don't think I even really gleaned that was a Crytek game that got talked about. So yeah, that's your showcase. A bunch of some interesting games and some weird stuff and some I don't know what's going on here, but seems solid. What stuff here has you most interested?
Let's see here. Let's see. Like I said, I am still kind of looking forward to the expanse of Osiris Reborn, but I'm tampering my expectations after recent news. Let's see. Super Meat Boy 3D looks neat. Stranger Than Heaven is definitely something I'm interested in because it's by the Yakuza devs. Let's see. The Eternal Life of Goldman actually looks really interesting. I'm kind of looking forward to that one. And also I'm looking forward to Vaunted as well, because that looks like something right up my alley. But yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, I think for me, I'll keep an eye on Stranger Than Heaven. We'll see, but for the things that seem more tangible right now, Super Meat Boy 3D, I'm curious about that. Might grab that this week, depending on how it looks. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know what else here I might check out. Yeah, it's like I already have Hades 2 on my PC. I don't need to buy it again when I'm not even close to. I don't know if I've gotten out of the tutorial technically in the PC version. Still in the middle of unlocking the basic stuff you do before you get started properly in that game. Yeah, I don't know. I'd just be Stranger Than Heaven and Super Meat Boy 3D for now on this. But yeah, that's gonna end up doing it. So yeah. Thank you to Brandon for joining this week.
Always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news as April begins, and we'll do a recap of releases for next few months. And have more news and such to talk about.
Oh,
We'll
yeah.
see. Hopefully better news.
God, I hope so.
'Cause yeah, this is not been a great week for news.
No.
But yeah, we'll be back next week, and if you enjoy the show, feel free to let friends and family know to check it out and select strangers who would also like to see better news in the near
Yes,
future.
please.
But yeah, thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead. We will see you all next time. Have a good one.
Bye.